Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Game Slackers on 101.5 UMFM.
Yep.
It is a radio station. It is. Normally, you pipe in with more. All right, then. So, yeah, we talk about video games on this show, and you should all be proud to know that I played a game in 2018 that's new.
Yeah.
It came out December the 13th, and I'm talking about Grease on the Switch.
It's by Nomada Studio. It also did not just come out for the Switch. Primarily, I think it was in development for PC, and it was produced by Devolver, who does a lot of nice little indie stuff.
They do. So, this is Nomada's, Nomada Studio. This is their first project, and it was conceptualized by Conrad Rosette, who wanted to do a game surrounding his art.
Yeah.
And it's very cool. It's very watercolory.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a very beautiful setting of a game where you are a girl who goes by the name of Grease. We have, it's how you pronounce it. It's French, Spanish, Catalonian.
Yeah.
So you wake up in the palm of a giant statue, a giant rock statue, and you try to sing to the statue, but you can't. You have no voice. And that's where your story begins. You end up it crumbles. The statue itself crumbles, does it not?
Mm-hmm.
And then you start walking, and that's pretty much the whole beginning of the game, is just having the ability to walk. That was a good chunk of the game. And then you get to a point where you start discovering different colors. The first one that you discover is red, but you have to learn how to take the shape of a rock first.
Yeah.
And you collect little star points to get yourself further along.
Mm-hmm.
It's a puzzle-solving game. It's a sort of a platforming game as well.
Yeah, I would say it's mostly platforming. Some puzzle. Like, there is some puzzles, but they're usually not, like, the hardest. It isn't that difficult of a game, which is fine. Like, this game, it's just I can so blatantly, like, I don't think it's a bad game. I think it's pretty good. I just can blatantly see that it's first game. I can see inspiration from so many other games. And it just sort of feels like, I don't want to rag on it too hard, but I've sort of been there, done that with this kind of game. Like, because I'm someone who likes artsy fartsy games, and I like this sort of idea. So I've played about like a dozen of games like this. And it's fine, but I'm just sort of kind of over this concept.
So this game takes a lot of inspiration from Journey. It takes inspiration from Ori. It takes, I don't want to say Hollow Knight, but sort of that feeling too, where you've got the exploration. It's a much lighter exploration game. And there's no combat. There is no combat in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of refreshing in a way. We're starting to see more and more games where there's no clear-cut enemy. And that's all right.
Yeah, well, I would say, yeah, there, once again, with this kind of game, I've seen this a lot. Like, and I would say you could say that the enemy is that darkness that's in it. Like, that would be probably the antagonist of the game, you would say.
Yeah.
Right. There is technically a bad guy.
As you are starting to gain colors, you are also starting to see a darkness start to permeate this world that you're exploring. So as you go along and get more color in your world, you do start to gain more abilities. You get the ability to turn into a rock, which means that wind can't blow you over. You can fall further. You can break things you couldn't break before. You eventually learn how to jump and double jump much higher than you could before. Swimming and singing.
Mm-hmm.
And the water levels are actually, I found them to be really fun. And I'm not normally a fan of water levels.
I agree. I think the water, like, here's another thing. This is why the water levels are fun, Megan, is because you get to go fast. and she moves at a very a pace that is just, I feel, if this game had been giving a dash, I know you would have to rework mechanics and stuff, but that would have just aided it so much, because there is some exploration in this game, because you can look for extra constellation stuff, and it does, you know, sometimes it does require you to go off the path, and it does just, it just takes too long to get back, like, for what I'm doing and what I'm playing, like, it just, there are certain things in this that are very thought out, and then other things that are just sort of, like, not thought out.
If you make an easy mistake, it can take a very long time to correct the mistake, because you went and got yourself backtracked.
Yeah, like, there isn't a lot of, like, go this way or go that way, which I'm fine with. I'm fine with you finding out where to go, but it's almost too vague. Like,
there was at no point, except maybe at the very end, where I felt myself to be wanting, I couldn't figure out where I was supposed to go next. You can go in any direction and complete what you need to complete.
You can't, though.
But that's the feeling of the game, where that was, I could go in any one direction and I wasn't going to be sent back.
Kind of, but you can't. Like, I know this. I know you think that, because I also thought when I was playing it, but you can't. Like, it's just sort of, you go in the right direction because you just are like, I hope this is the right way.
So either we were very lucky, or that is a big old plus on their design work.
I think it's a negative.
You think so?
Yeah, because you can end up going the wrong way really easily. Like, there's a lot of instances where that happens. And I think that sort of, it goes back to the fact that you have to backtrack for certain things. Some games nicely tie it up where, you know, you get the thing and then you arrive back at the beginning where you got it. And it does this sometimes, but it's primarily not for, like, extra bits. Also, you can't backtrack. You can't go back to other levels, which I feel is also kind of a detriment.
I wonder if it's just a matter of going back and replaying the game, but that's a lot of trouble to go through to find those extra little bits.
Yeah, I know you can't, like, because I tried to continue my game from wherever it at the end, and it just puts you back to the before the last quote-unquote level or whatever.
And there's a lot of slots for, I guess, achievements and finding all that extra stuff, and I only got the four main colors.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like a whole bunch of other slots that must be for other collectible ideas.
Yeah, it is those extra stars. So once you get the amount that is in a level, like there's the turtle, we'll say turtle water level, tree level, not windmill, kind of windmill level, kind of like that was windmill
desert
rock.
Windmill.
Yeah. So in each of those levels, they have a set amount of stars. And if you get those set amount of stars, you then can get whatever those things are.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're like extra powers. Like, here's the thing. Gris is incredibly beautiful. Like, it is undoubtedly one of the most beautiful games I've ever played. But unlike something like Journey, it doesn't have that, like, emotional story-drivenness. Like, there 100% is a story here, but it's so vague. And at the same time, just, like, I can very much easily pinpoint it along with, like, half a dozen other games. Like, it reminded me, or it made me the same kind of, I don't know, sort of like ness that Rhyme gave me.
Okay, yeah.
And I really was excited about Rhyme aesthetically, because I was like, ooh, pretty game, me like. and same thing with Gris. And I'm trying not to rag too hard on it once again, because I think it's their first game. And also, it's sort of like, I realize that they probably put most of the effort into the art and design of it rather than the story and maybe the mechanics. Like,
and the music.
Music is great.
The, like, music is fantastic.
Like, there's the artsy aspect of this game is incredible. Like, I love that aspect. I just think that this story is so boring. And I've heard it so many times. And if you're going to do it, you need to do it in a way that's not boring.
So let's dip into that slightly. What did you pick up on the themes of this game.
This game is either about death, grief, or loss. It is something about that.
And you would have gotten it exactly as to what the themes were supposed to be. It's supposed to be the stages of grief.
Well, here's the thing. They give that away before the last, or at the last color. That's the last color, which is acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
sorry to ruin it, but yeah, this game is basically you sort of go through, and like I hate that I got it in the very first moment of the game where she loses her voice, because I was like, you know, yeah, like I just got it. And then the statue figure is obviously a lost loved one, whether like girlfriend, wife, mom, sister, don't know. But, and I think that's vague, and I appreciate that that's at least a little vague. It's mm-hmm. not like, this was my mom and she's gone.
That's what the problem with Rhyme had, was that it was very, very heavy-handed yeah. at the end. It's like, and this is about my dead child.
Yeah.
And that's not.
Well, I'm just sort of like, I was like, I was enjoying my fantasy here, and I did not realize that it was just me, a child, going towards death. Hurrah.
But no, you don't know the connection between Gris and this female statue who you work so hard to build up, only to have this darkness take it down most of the way yeah. through the game. Sorry to spoil that, but
yeah, it's just like it's once again absolutely beautiful, just very typical. I feel story wise, in terms of these artsy fartsy games, right?
I do hope that they aren't going to stop with this being, like, I hope they're going to not stop making games, because I want to,
No, I would assume they're going to continue. Like, I know that this is doing well. Like, people are really enjoying it, which is fine.
It's got a 10 out of 10 on Steam.
Yeah, that's great. Like, I think it has a lot of really high reviews, and I don't think it doesn't, like, it's not double negative. This doesn't work to my advantage. I do think it deserves a lot of the praise. I just feel that I have heard this story so many times, I'm very bored of it. Especially since I love to play these artsy-fartsy video games. And it's just like, that's like the story that we love, mm-hmm. right? It's fine.
So don't go into this game for the message. Go into it for the aesthetic and the music. And the music itself, I want to comment on one more time, because it is so beautifully done. And I love the singing part. The last skill that you get, it's a beautiful little melody that they got going on. And you can tell they did a lot with the sound design.
Yeah. Like, the artsy parts of this game are so good. The soundtrack was done by, I think they're called the Berlinists. Or Berlinist. Just single Berlin. Just one Berlinist.
The Berlinist band from Barcelona.
What? They're not from Berlin?
No, they are from Barcelona.
That makes sense. See, I told you. Yeah. I was telling you before, I thought this was, what, Spanish or French?
Barcelona, Catalonia.
Yeah.
And this is just,
I guess it's technically a Catalonian game.
Yeah, it is.
That's cool.
And Conrad Rosette actually does a lot of freelance illustration for other games. He's done work for Disney. He's done...
Like what Disney?
It didn't specifically say.
Wikipedia did not tell Megan.
I wasn't going on Wikipedia. I was actually going off the biography on their website.
Oh, he just said
Disney.
Vague wavehead Disney.
He's done work for Phineas and Ferb. He's done Paw Patrol. He's done... No.
Paw Patrol is not Disney, but I was did he really do Phineas and Ferb? Because I was like, that is actually amazing. I wish I saw some of that humor in Gris. It's not a humorful. It's not. Mm. It's not related to Phineas and Ferb at all. So
no,
don't.
That was a joke, guys.
I was like, you didn't actually do it.
Sometimes I make jokes on the radio.
I like that one.
So yes, you can check out his art. He's got an Instagram. That's
Conrad.
Conrad Rosette.
Yeah, R O S E T. I think it is not like T T E, right?
That's what I have, is TTE.
Oh, I lied. Okay.
And the Berlinists are actually on Bandcamp as well, and SoundCloud. You can actually listen to the Gris soundtrack for yourself there.
And probably buy it.
And yeah, you can buy it and support them. We want to see more of them, and I would love to see a Gris 2, a larger, more expanded game.
Yeah, I don't think there would, like, I don't know where they'd go.
Or a similar vein.
I will take a spiritual successor for sure.
For sure.
Yeah, well, like, I'll take it because I don't want them. I think this is a great first step. And now Megan's like, what are we going to do for the rest of the time? But don't worry, Megan, I played a game today.
What game did you play, Alice? And so, I had news to talk about, but go on, tell me about this game.
We can news after. Yes. But I've played Heaven Will Be Mine by Worst Game Girls. They originally did We Know the Devil, which is their more, what is it called? Visual novel style?
Yeah.
Games? Yeah. So they're primarily that, but I would say they're sort of like heavily queer focused. And We Know the Devil was like about a group of campers, and there was something, you know, scary at night that happened. And I will say these are kind of, I wouldn't say dating sims, but there's like
relationship aspects.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting. The primary, like, I would say the best part of these is the writing. Like, the writing's really strong. It's really interesting. Heaven Will Be Mine is, like, I want to say it's sort of like a mecha Gundam love letter kind of thing.
Ooh.
Like, but also, like, sort of space pirate. What is that? Galaxy 999, Space Captain Harlock kind of style.
Oh, they're going right to my heart, you guys.
It's pretty nifty. It takes place, I think, I want to say in, like, the early 2000s or, like, the 1990s, but it's a total alternate universe, and something wacky happened after the Cold War that involves, like, space, so now we're in space now. There's three different factions, and you get to play as three different characters. So there's Lunaterra, who is the moon.
That's cool.
That means the moon, guys.
Would it also mean Earth because Lunaterra?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. So Lunaterra is like not a bad guy because they're all, I don't know. This is kind of
shades of gray.
It is very much shades of gray. Like, I really enjoy the way that these characters are written because it is like, is what we're doing right? It sounds pretty okay, but it's sort of the similar, like, if you, because we were watching Gundam Wing, and if you've watched the old one, you look at it and you're, but even, like, the politics are there, where
yeah,
it's sort of like,
it's very politics heavy-ish for an anime.
Yeah, well, and I think it really goes good, like, you've seen that meme where it's like, ooh, cool robots, where it's just sort of like war goes over top, and that's sort of the same thing with this, except it's more like, there's more war stuff to it, plus a little bit of like flirting with the people that you are attacking.
So, okay. Yeah.
So I started playing off as Pluto, and she is like, she's apparently sort of like really perfect. She's kind of perkier and nicer than like all of the other characters so far.
I'm going to interrupt for a second.
Yeah.
NASA has announced that Pluto is a planet again, by the way.
Oh, that's nice. It's actually really funny because they mention, there's some mention of that and sort of how, you know, like, Pluto, the character, is, you know, is not now not a planet, quote unquote, but, you know, what does that mean? Sort of like, she still has the strength of whatever. Anyways, Pluto's really powerful. And it's basically, she is in charge. Lunaterra is a traitor. She turned her back. She originally was hanging out with Pluto and her gang.
Right.
And now, like, it's basically they're trying to stop a certain faction from coming to Earth and destroying everything. But each faction thinks they're, you know, in the right.
That's usually how the whole thing goes,
it's usually
right?
How that goes.
There's no clear villain or good guy in any sort of situation like
no.
this.
And this is neat. Like, there's a lot of reading in this, which is fine, but except for the fact that I read fast and miss information like nobody's business. But I'm enjoying it. The UI is really nice. Like, it's pretty simple, right? Because it's not going to be, like, fully CG'd cutscenes, right? We're just sort of, like, a picture of a character and a picture of another character, and they talk, right? That's sort of what we're getting at, yeah.
So what console is this for?
Well, it just recently came out for the iPad. It was originally for PC and Mac, came out this year, and then they put it on the iPad. So I was like, well, finally is my time to shine and get this game I've wanted for a while. I haven't finished it, haven't beaten one route, but I think I'm pretty close. Because I think it's only about, like, a 7-day, you know, scenario because there are three different characters you can play as. And I would assume, so between, I didn't actually mention, there's Pluto, Saturn, and Luna, and you can romance however which way you want.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Which, once again, it's interesting. I do like it because it's not really about the romance. It's sort of like, more like, it's about the ongoing war and the relationships and as well as these characters, which I'm down for. I'm down to listen.
There you go. So the name of that game again?
Heaven Will Be Mine. And it's on PC, Mac, and iOS. Is that what it is now?
Yeah, I believe that is.
Apples.
There you go, apples.
You can play it on any kind of apple.
There you
Granny
go.
Granny Smith.
Okay, so we got some news. We're starting to get underway with some previews for games coming up in 2019.
Oh, no.
I'm so sorry.
Like, it's already started?
It's already starting. So I am a fan of Devil May Cry.
I was going to say, of Kingdom Hearts? Of course you are, Megan.
That's coming up. And you know what? I have words on that one. Anyway, Devil May Cry, they put out another teaser trailer, and they put Devil May Cry 5. You are right. And they've introduced a new character whose name is V.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh,
hey,
right.
You know what?
And he's playable.
Okay, but you know what? They already did. Do you not remember Metal Gear Solid? Like, he's called V, right?
Yes.
And it was the fifth game, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just pointing out that. Okay, what does V do?
V has a lot of the half-demon powers of Dante and Virgil, but he has the ability to summon creatures to fight with him, and I bet you're really going to love the fact that you can summon a giant panther to fight with you.
Does he have white hair?
He can have white hair. He starts with, well, he's got...
What do you mean, can?
He has the devil arm trigger thing that will make his hair go white and be
so
all cool.
So is he like Devil May Cry Dante? Where he has brown hair, and then sometimes when he gets powered, he gets white hair.
That's what the trailer seems to indicate without it being the Devil May Cry Dante. He just happens to have
the ability. They just made him a different character?
And they made him very poetically goth.
That's actually, I know like lots of people disliked it, but it was actually not a bad game. Aside from the fact that it was a lousy like Devil May Cry reboot, whatever. Like, it was not bad.
It plays very similarly, but it's such a different take the idea.
It's a very Western version, right?
It's such a Western version.
Yeah.
And it's really weird after playing the really cheesy Japanese version
and
where everything's over the top.
Yeah.
But it does look like it's going to play very similarly to the other Devil May Cries, which I enjoy personally.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have a good time with this over the top. But terrible poetic character who can summon giant tigers.
That's cool. Are they like bigger than regular? Okay, one. I love when you said multiple and I got more excited. I was like, he's more than one?
I believe he can summon three different creatures. One is a giant cat. There's one that's a spider and one that's a griffin.
Okay, I'm down.
Yeah, so that's going to be cool. Now, you had commented on Kingdom Hearts, and yes, Kingdom Hearts 3.
We got to be specific. Which one are you talking about?
It is at long last, finally, the final.
Yeah.
Maybe.
The final countdown. The end of January, apparently, which, you know what? I kind of think with the amount of trailer stuff I've seen, you know what? It has to be at least that. Or else they'll move it back a month or a couple weeks. What?
Now, they've done something interesting that I was reading about where in case of accidental leaks of the game, they are not going to release a patch to reveal the actual ending until after the release date. That means that no one's going to find out how it ends. Yeah, no one's going to find out how it ends until after the game is released.
Wow, that is interesting. That's absolutely fascinating that they are like cutting, basically they're chopping off a part of the game that you can't touch until, like, I guess that kind of makes sense if you think about it in terms of often they will send people like copies that you can only show an amount of, right? Online or whatever.
That means they can't data mine those and figure out what happens at the end and spoil anything until we're all allowed to play.
I appreciate that. I don't hate that. I kind of think it's really funny, and I wonder if somebody will like figure out like a way around it regardless, or somebody will like go to the Square Enix place and just be like, I got it, everybody. Like, I feel that it's great, but at the same time, it really does encourage people to go the extra mile to actually try to do it. I think this would stop them, hopefully, right?
Hopefully this will make sure that none of this gets spoiled for us.
This seems pretty, like, quote, leak-proof. Mm-hmm. I don't make that as a pun, but it was the best choice of words.
Now, as a final note, we were talking about Smash Brothers in the recent past, and I have to ask you, who is currently the strongest character to play as?
Oh, I have no idea. Pikachu. No, it's not Pikachu.
Think again.
Mewtwo.
There has been a glitch, and it's with Isabelle.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
I did
actually sort of hear about this.
If you play Isabelle in such a way that you try to trigger her Smash ability, she will summon endless, countless support characters. And the best video I've seen is her summoning a whole bunch of Knuckles the Echidnas.
Oh, wow. I did not realize that those were what I was seeing. I've seen several of those videos. That's really funny. It's just basically like, you can't even see the player characters because they're overrun with a bunch of, the support characters. That's amazing.
So we'll see if they patch this out.
Oh, yes.
They have to. They kind of have to. But you need to have two Isabelles interacting at the same time with that ability in order to trigger all the support characters.
That's really funny. So if you play two Isabelles against each other,
one of them's going to come out on top and have a whole bunch of minions.
That's really funny, actually.
So that is just one last thing I wanted to report on.
Isabelle's minions.
Except for maybe one last thing. We still need to watch, but there has been a Christmas special featuring Liquid Snake and Solid Snake.
Oh, no.
Where they sing the night before Metal Gear.
Oh, cute. I was together. Like, the night...
Is
it the voice actors?
It is the voice actors interacting together.
That's really funny.
I figured that'd be something special that you'd enjoy.
That's cute. Lovely Metal Gear. So the most Christmas of all video games. It's not.
So even though this is up after Christmas, I want you all to still enjoy the spirit of the season up until the new year.
Pretend it was just Christmas. Ukrainian which it probably Christmas was. Coming. Yeah. Still, there we go.
Orthodox Christmas is still a thing, guys.
So loopholes.
All right, everybody, that's everything we have for you this week. Keep enjoying your break if you get one. Keep slacking if you don't. And we will see you in the new year.
Bye.